Ever notice how, you know, every big news story, every political argument, it always seems to circle back to the economy.
Always.
Inflation, jobs, growth. They're not just terms thrown around, are they?
Not at all. They're really at the core of what governments are trying to do day to day.
But what's really driving those big policy decisions? What are the hidden goals behind it all?
Exactly. And that's what we're digging into today, taking a real deep dive into that kind of economic blueprint.
Going past the headlines.
Yeah, to get at the fundamental macroeconomic policy objectives that nations aim for, it's really about understanding the architecture, you could say, behind how they try to keep things stable and moving forward.
And you, listening, you've sent us some great source material for this. So we're going to unpack, what is it, seven key goals,
Seven core objectives, yeah.
right, that governments are constantly trying to juggle, everything from keeping prices steady to managing global trade, even thinking about the planet for the future.
Covers a lot of ground.
We'll look at what they are, obviously, but also why these specific goals get chosen and the challenges, the really tough parts in actually hitting them.
And the trade-offs, that's crucial.
Absolutely, the trade-offs, where things get really interesting. By the end, hopefully, you'll have a much clearer sense of that constant balancing act behind all the economic news you hear.
And what's really, I think, illuminating is just how interconnected these goals are. Once you grasp that,
Changes how you see things.
completely, it transforms how you look at everything from, say, interest rate changes to the national budget. You start seeing the strategy behind the numbers.
Okay, let's get into it then. Our sources really stress that government macro policy isn't just random actions, right? It's
Yeah.
meant to be this unified push towards broad goals for a stable, thriving economy.
A cohesive effort, yeah.
And the first one, the one we probably hear about the most, inflation.
Always inflation.
Yeah, we hear governments aiming for what, a low stable rate? Often around 2%.
That's the common target in many places.
But just saying prices going up doesn't quite capture it.
Yeah.
What's the deeper thinking behind targeting that number 2%? And why is stability so important?
Well, the material makes it clear, right? Everyone gets that high inflation eats away at your savings, your purchasing power.
Of course.
But that 2%, it isn't just pulled out of thin air. It's generally seen as this kind of sweet spot.
A sweet spot. How so?
It's high enough to avoid deflation prices falling, which can be disastrous. People stop spending, stop investing, waiting for prices to fall further. It basically freezes the economy.
Okay, so it avoids that freeze.
Right. But it's also low enough that it doesn't cause massive disruption. It allows for gentle adjustments in wages and prices across the economy without the chaos of really high inflation. Think of it like oil in the economic engine.
Keeps things running smoothly.
Exactly. Too much friction with high inflation, or it seizes up with deflation. Both create uncertainty, slow things down. The challenge, though, as the sources point out,
Yeah.
is measuring it accurately, all the different goods and services people buy, and then using the right tools like interest rates, which often take a long time to actually have an effect. There's a lag.
That makes a lot of sense. Keeping the machine running smoothly. Okay, so moving from prices at home to how a country interacts financially with the world. Balance of payments.
BOP.
The BOP. Sounds pretty technical. The sources say it's more than just a financial report card. What are we really talking about here? Why is an imbalance such a worry for governments?
Yeah, it sounds dry, but the deep dive shows it's really critical. It's a key sign of whether a country's economy is sustainable long term and how attractive it looks to investors globally.
Okay.
Take a persistent current account deficit, for example. That means a country's basically buying more from the world goods, services than it's selling.
Importing more than exporting.
Right. And that difference has to be paid for somehow.
Oh.
Often, our sources explain by borrowing money from other countries or maybe selling off assets, companies, property to foreign buyers.
Is that always bad?
Not necessarily. I mean, if the borrowing is funding, say, new factories or infrastructure that will boost future exports, it can be fine, productive investment. But if
Okay.
it's a long-term structural deficit that isn't being managed, that can lead to real problems. Your currency might weaken, investors might pull their money out, capital flight. You could even lose some economic control.
Serious stuff.
It is. But on the flip side, a huge ongoing surplus isn't always perfect either.
Really? Sounds good to me.
Well, it can sometimes signal that people inside the country aren't spending enough. Maybe demand is suppressed, or the currency might be deliberately kept too low, which can cause friction, trade tensions with other countries.
Ah,
So
wow.
the real goal isn't just zero or a massive surplus. It's achieving a sustainable balance. one that supports long-term growth without making the country vulnerable.
A delicate dance on the world stage, then. Okay, next one. Something I think everyone gets personally.
Yeah.
Unemployment.
Yes. Hugely important.
The goal is usually called full employment.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean zero unemployment, does it?
No, definitely not. There's always some natural churn.
So what are the bigger issues, economically and socially, with high unemployment? Why is it such a laser focus for policymakers? And what about the different types of unemployment the sources mention?
Precisely. The sources really hammer this home. High unemployment isn't just devastating for the individuals and families affected.
Obviously.
It's a massive waste for the whole economy. All that lost output, that wasted human potential.
Right. Productive capacity just sitting idle.
Exactly. Plus, it strains public finances, more benefits paid out, less tax revenue coming in. And historically, high unemployment can fuel social unrest, instability. It's a major concern.
And the different types.
Ah, yes. That distinction is vital for policy. You've got frictional unemployment. That's just people moving between jobs, school leavers looking for their first job. It's seen as normal, even healthy, in a dynamic economy.
Okay.
Then there's structural unemployment. This is trickier. It's a mismatch. The jobs available don't match the skills the unemployed workers have, or maybe the jobs are in a different part of the country.
So like after an industry declines.
Exactly. This often needs long-term solutions. Investing in education, retraining programs, maybe even policies to encourage new industries.
Cyclical.
That's tied to the economic cycle. When the economy slows down, businesses lay people off. This is where governments might use stimulus spending more, or cutting taxes, or central banks cut interest rates, trying to boost demand. Counter-cyclical policy.
And seasonal, I guess that's predictable.
Yeah, like farm work or tourism jobs. Policymakers understand that. But the key is knowing which type of unemployment is high, because you need different tools for structural versus cyclical problems, you see. A generic approach won't fix everything.
Right, targeted solutions. Okay, that flows nicely into the next one. Economic growth. We all want the economy to grow, right?
Generally, yes.
But our sources talk about actual growth versus potential growth. What's that distinction about, and why does the quality of growth matter just as much, or maybe more, than just how fast it's growing?
That's a really important distinction the deep dive highlights. Actual growth is basically about using the resources you already have more effectively, getting more output from the existing workforce and capital, squeezing more efficiency out.
Okay. Making the current engine run better.
Pretty much. Potential growth, though, is about expanding the whole engine's capacity in the long run.
Hi.
Through things like technological innovation, building better infrastructure, improving education, and skills boosting human capital. It's about increasing the economy speed limit, you could say.
Got it. Bigger potential.
Exactly. Now, growth is obviously vital for raising living standards, creating jobs, funding public services through taxes.
The upsides are clear.
But, and this is a big but, in the sources, it's not automatically a good thing without qualification. Growth at all costs can be damaging.
How so?
Well, rapid unchecked growth can cause the economy to overheat. Too much demand chasing too few goods, which fuels inflation. We've seen that. And maybe even more critically, growth that isn't sustainable can wreck the environment, deplete natural resources we rely on.
Short-term gain, long-term pain.
Precisely. And it can also worsen inequality if the benefits aren't shared widely. The material points to cases where GDP shot up, but pollution became unbearable, or the gap between the rich and poor widened dramatically, leading to social problems down the line.
So it's not just about making the economic pie bigger.
It's also about how it's made sustainably and how it gets sliced up. The quality and distribution matter hugely.
Which leads us perfectly into goal number 5, economic development. How is this different from just growth? It sounds broader, more qualitative.
It absolutely is. This is why the perspective really widens in our sources. Development isn't just about more dollars or pounds or euros of output.
It's more than GDP.
Much more. It's fundamentally about improving the overall quality of life for everyone in a society.
Like what specifically?
Better healthcare access and outcomes, higher literacy rates, clean water, decent infrastructure people can rely on, even things like political stability and personal security. It's captured better by things like the Human Development Index, not just GDP per capita.
A more holistic view of progress.
Exactly. The big challenge for governments here is making sure that any economic growth actually translates into these widespread improvements, that it's inclusive and doesn't just benefit a small segment while leaving others behind.
What helps achieve that?
Well, our sources highlight things beyond just economic policy.
Right.
Strong, trustworthy institutions, good governance, the rule of law being applied fairly. These create the foundation for growth to actually lead to broad, sustainable development. They're often more critical than just the raw growth number itself.
Right. The underlying framework matters.
Okay? Right.
That connects directly to sustainability. We hear that word all the time.
Yeah.
What does it mean specifically as a macroeconomic goal? And what tools do governments use? What are the tough choices, the trade-offs involved?
Sustainability in this economic context is fundamentally about fairness between generations, intergenerational equity.
Meaning?
Meeting our economic needs today without messing things up so badly that future generations can't meet their own needs. It's about ensuring economic activity is environmentally sound, uses resources responsibly.
So green economics.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Integrating environmental limits into economic decision making. The sources talk about specific tools governments can use.
Like?
Things like carbon taxes, making pollution more expensive, or cap and trade systems where there's a limit on total emissions and companies can buy or sell permits to pollute. Green subsidies to encourage clean technologies. The idea is to build the environmental costs into the market price signals.
Make the polluter pay, basically.
That's the principle.
Yeah.
But the trade-off is often pretty stark, at least in the short term.
How so?
Well, imposing strict environmental rules or a high carbon tax might increase costs for businesses right now. That could potentially hurt their competitiveness against firms in countries with looser rules, or even lead to job losses in certain industries, or slower GDP growth in the near term.
The classic economy versus environment dilemma.
It often gets framed that way. Governments are constantly trying to navigate that, balancing immediate economic concerns with the undeniable need for long-term ecological health, and, well, societal survival. It's a very difficult balancing act.
No easy answers there.
Okay.
Final objective, redistribution of income and wealth. This sounds straightforwardly about fairness, creating a more equal society. But is there an economic argument for it, too, beyond just social justice?
Yes, there's a very strong economic rationale presented in the material. Extreme inequality, huge gaps in income and wealth isn't just socially divisive. It can actually harm economic efficiency and stability overall.
How does it do that?
Well, think about it. If a huge chunk of the population has very little money, they can't buy much. That leads to underconsumption, weak overall demand in the economy.
Right. People need money to spend.
Exactly. Extreme inequality can also stifle social mobility. If your background completely determines your future, you waste a lot of potential talent. People are held back not by lack of ability, but lack of opportunity.
A waste of human capital again.
Yes. Plus, high inequality is often linked with more social tension, crime, political instability, all things that tend to discourage investment and make long-term economic planning much harder.
So redistribution isn't just taking from the rich to give to the poor.
It's about more than that from an economic perspective. Governments use tools like progressive tax systems where higher earners pay a larger percentage, welfare benefits, unemployment support, and crucially providing public services like quality education and healthcare access for everyone.
To level the playing field a bit.
Partly, yes. But also to foster social cohesion, boost overall demand by putting money in the hands of people likely to spend it, and create a more stable and ultimately more productive economy by ensuring wider participation and reducing the very real economic costs associated with deep poverty and inequality.
Okay, wow. So we've really unpacked these seven big goals governments are juggling: managing inflation, balancing the books with the world, jobs, growth, development, sustainability, and fairness.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge, complex picture.
It really is. And what stands out so clearly from our sources is, as we said, these objectives aren't pursued in neat little boxes. They're all tangled up together.
Pulling in different directions sometimes.
Often, almost inevitably. Every policy choice you make to push towards one goal tends to create ripples affecting the others. That's where the really hard decisions and those tricky trade-offs come in.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Say a government goes all out to cut unemployment really fast, maybe with lots of spending. That could easily push up demand and ignite inflation.
Right. Solve one problem, create another.
Or pushing for maximum economic growth might clash head-on with environmental sustainability goals if it means more pollution or resource depletion. Or that same rapid growth might make inequality worse, which then forces you to think about more redistribution later. It's this dynamic, interconnected system. Every lever you pull has knock-on effects.
So for you listening, what does all this mean? Well, hopefully the next time you hear on the news about, say, interest rates going up, or a new trade deal being signed, or the latest job figures, you'll have a much better feel for the underlying objectives the government is likely thinking about, the complex strategies involved.
Seeing the bigger picture.
Yeah, seeing the threads connecting those headlines, and appreciating the, frankly, difficult choices leaders have to make constantly, supposedly on our behalf.
Which does raise a fascinating final thought, doesn't it? In a world facing finite resources, really fast technological shifts, climate change, changing social values, how might the priorities among these traditional economic goals change in the future?
Good question.
Could we see new metrics becoming just as important, or even more important, than just GDP growth? Maybe things like national resilience, or digital access and equity, or even measures of well-being becoming truly central to how we judge a nation's success and its people's prosperity.